Welcome to the iLEAP's Early Careers podcast, where we explore scientific research related to the biosphere and the atmosphere, and share the personal experiences of our early careers scientists as they navigate their way through academia.
Hi, my name is Tichomir, and I am an iLEAP's Early Career Committee representative for Europe. Today's podcast forms part of a series in which we chat with people from a range of roles within and outside of academia, and who are both in and from the region of Europe.
Today on the podcast, we have Jing Tang, who is an ecosystem modeler in the Department of Physical Geography and Ecosystem Science at the Lund University in Sweden, and at the Section of Terrestrial Ecology at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. So hello, Jing, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Hi, Tiomi. Thanks for the invitation for this scientific podcast. I think I'm really looking forward to for our chat and discussion.
Yeah, very nice. Very welcome. Yeah, so I was wondering, maybe we can start the discussion from like the beginning, right? So what inspired you to get into science in the first place?
That's a good question. So I think for me it's a little bit different. So I have quite continuous research or like study period. So after I finished my master in China, I got this PhD scholarship from Erasmus, European Erasmus scholarship, and to come to Europe. So I did my 4-year PhD in Sweden. And then before my final defense, I got like a nice postdoc offer in the University of Copenhagen. So started my research since then. So I haven't really had any opportunities to really take a job outside academic, so which means that I haven't been really struggled to make choices between the academic or non-academic work. But I think in general myself, I think I'm very motivated, where it's very complicated task in a way that there are a lot of dynamics or interactions in the task, but meantime I can see the steps forward. So that's what I found. Is I have a lot of opportunities in the when I do the science. I think maybe another motivation or inspiration could be that I have a lot of freedom. I think that to identify or to find what are the current research gaps, and then figure out in my own way or in certain ways the importance or unimportance of this gap. I think that's what I have been really interested in, like this to doing this type of work.
So it's like identifying the knowledge gaps, the research gap. It's very interesting. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more specifically about the research that you are doing at the moment?
Yes, so I'm an ecosystem modeler. So I have received education in a bachelor in like geography information science, the GIS, and then gradually I did my more post the doctor education in the physical geography and also ecosystem science. So my research is about quantitatively assessing the response and the feedbacks of different ecosystem process on the changing climate, particularly using modeling approach as well as more focus in high latitude regions. So my PhD studies has most related to distributed hydrological process with vegetation dynamics, carbon cyclings in a catchment, and then gradually my po- uh, my my postdoc has shifted a little bit the research areas, which is more focused on the understanding the changes in plant BVOC emissions, so which is biogenic volatile organic compounds, and understand how they change in response to the different climatic variables, and also look at how changes in BVOC emissions might impact the atmosphere composition, chemistry, as well as the climate. So that's roughly about me and my research area. Yeah.
That's so interesting. It's so important to do, and we touched on it a little bit, but I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about your career progression. So you had this PhD opportunity in London, but what is your story so far, like from the beginning to here for today?
You mean like after PhD or?
So like how did you get this PhD and maybe like after the PhD like to today?
So I was in China, so the last year of my master program. So there is this very special collaborations between Europe and China, where the top 10 university in China are exchanging the students with the European universities. So I applied that program and I got that scholarship. That's actually supporting my PhD studies. So yes. in London, Sweden. So after the PhD, then I see this very nice opportunities or postdoc positions in Copenhagen, University of Copenhagen, working with slightly different project, which is the focus on BVOC, but using the same model which I have been worked on for many years in PhD. So I applied that postdoc position. Then I got it, which I think I was very lucky. and then I think during the first year of my postdoc, and then so I had a very good supervision from the professor Riccarina. So we also started to develop some research ideas that I could potentially apply the grant by myself. That's where that I actually write my first research grant and send to the Marie Curie Individual Fellowship. So I think that in particular I really like the funding motivations from this from Marie Curie scholarship fellowship, because they focus more on the research ideas. And instead of a lot of weights on how many publication you have and how many citation you have, this is really good chance for the young scientists or newly graduate PhDs to identify the research areas that they want to focus on. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, well, it's like, so it's very interesting, like this, that you applied for this Marie Curie, so it required you to have a lot of your own ideas. So I was just wondering, what are some of the difficulties regarding the job as an ecosystem modeler? How did you overcome the biggest challenges of your work so far?
I need to be continuing with this Marie Curie the fellowship thing. It seems they are giving a lot of support for the young scientists give a lot of at least that opportunity to fund this young scientist. I got it this grants, but then. But at that time, I don't have any directly related publications on that topic. So which I feel like, okay, oh, it's like Nice that they like the ideas. So yeah.
Yeah.
So and then afterwards I also applied some Swedish grants, and then as a postdoc to support my own postdoc. So it has been rather smooth after the PhD graduations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm sure it required a lot of work to make it so smooth.
Yeah, I guess it's the first proposal is the most challenging one. Really need to read a lot of literatures, particularly if it's some new fields you want to explore. So regarding to your questions about the challenges or difficulties, I think that it's particular for modelers. I would think that the time, how to say, the time management is, at least for me, it's very challenging. So because like the model I'm working with is a process-based models, and many process are interlinked, or they are so when you add or modify one process, it might influence many other process or the output. So it often requires a lot of time to benchmark the changes of a certain new process, and there are always new bugs you can find in the code.
For sure.
Yeah. So fixing like a code bug in the model might require like you rerun or reevaluate many steps that you have done before. It's quite, I think it's quite time consuming, and then sometimes it's difficult to really plan each steps in a very precise ways. I mean, time wise. So, and then how to overcome these challenges? That I think it's very nice to work in a team, or in a way that you always have many pairs of the eyes to look at the same piece of code. And like set up certain routines that people in this group can always cross checking or evaluating the different new process. But sometimes you are so focused on your development, and then you might ignore some other like side effects of the changes, or some other interactions that you haven't been able to evaluate. Go ahead. Yeah.
When you write these codes, that it's actually like a team process. Like it needs many people to find the bug, right?
Yeah. So I think also this might be like more relevant for people like develop a model that might be used for many other people afterwards. I guess most people want to develop a model that can be used for other people as well. So in this case, that the readability of the code need to be checked. Of course, the functionality need to be checked. And we always have to compare with certain data sets, observation-based data sets. So there are many steps that need to be done. So it's not only writing the code in the models, but many other steps have to take up. I think it's nice to have other people to work together.
Yeah, for sure. And I was wondering what are the advantages? What are the really really cool things that something really great that happened during your career as an ecosystem modeler? Can you share some of those?
So the model that I have spent most of my time or career time. Mm-hmm. It's this large scale like a dynamic system model, as you know, LPJ GAS.
What's the name of it?
LPJ GAS. So this the advantage of developing these large scale models or applying these large scale models is that you are able to compare a lot of modeled variables outputs with many kinds of data sets, ranging from like machine learning access to different kinds of satellite data to site level observations. So I think it is in a way cool things that you are able to compare the same variables, same ecosystem variables derived from a totally different approach, like such as model against satellite against the anticovariance measurements to see how they varies, and then these comparisons actually can tell us a lot of things about like the potential, like the dynamics or the patterns. I think I found it's quite interesting for this this type of modeling and comparisons.
Yeah, so like combining the data from different scales, putting them together.
Yeah, and also different techniques.
So interesting. Yeah. And you can get to know so many cool things from the models.
Yeah, definitely. So and that things I'm thinking is because the model I'm working with is process based, so we know that nature is complex. So the model is always a simplified representation of the real world. But then another fun part, I think, that in the model, you can always, I want to look at, CO2 impacts on the vegetations. We could set up the wrong way that we fix the CO2 concentrations and then see how the model responds. So it's simplified, but meantime also that we could single out or quantify the impact from the individual, one individual input or one individual drivers or one individual process, which I think the outputs can be informative, but also we need to integrate it with caution, so with other interactions in mind. What else could be that the another things that I found is very interesting or fascinating. I'm always fascinated to see these interactions between the land or terrestrial ecosystem and the atmosphere. So for instance, for BVOCs, a lot of focus has been putting on how BVOCs respond to the environmental variables, and then with models, you can couple the ecosystem model with the atmospheric chemistry models, and then you could dynamically simulate or to estimate. Now the BVOC emissions has been changed by certain, let's say, process, and how that will influence or directly influence on the aerosol formations, cloud, as well as the potentially the climatic variables. So, and then I think it's not only like one dimension, like the vertical dimension, but also in terms of the spatial. I think it's very cool.
For sure. I love in the models that you do, the whole Arctic area. So it's really over a large scale. It's really cool. And I was wondering, what about if there is someone who would like to start a career as a scientist and more specifically as an ecosystem modeler? Would you have any ideas for young people out there who are considering this career?
The modeler. I think the suggestion for people who want to do a lot of modeling work afterwards, I would suggest or maybe good that divide the project into small steps can be very specific steps, and then I would think that maybe plan potential collaborations that in these steps, because quite often that you might want someone to check your code, you might want some data, particular data sets that to evaluate this step. And then the scientists are often very, very kind to collaborate. So a lot of things that we cannot know everything by ourselves, right? So this kind of collaboration, teamwork, so discussion or data sharing, or even sharing the not only observation data but also other models data, could be very helpful for you to know better how your model performs, I guess. Yeah, but in general, about if people want to continue, like as scientists, I would think that apply your own grant at early stage is very, it's very helpful, because as I mentioned earlier, that some grants are really targeted at the young scientists. And then once you get your own grant, it is a good way to show your own show your independence. So it's not only that applying for postdoc positions, but of course that is also important on the to join the large project. But applying your own grant is definitely very beneficial for your future career. I'm thinking another point that I recently experienced that so for many of us that who want stay in the academic the career as a career, so getting faculty positions is a goal, right?
That's what we expect.
So I only started to apply this faculty position this year. I think I should have started earlier. So which actually made me realize there are so many other things required for this faculty positions apart from like publication and also the citations, such as they are asking you management skills, your contributions to community, like how many like conference sessions you have you like heard, and then also like experience like in teaching or in developing teaching materials, and of course like your own research grants. So I mean that I didn't know this earlier. So I think that now I know. I mean, the once you know these things, then you might think a little bit more when this different opportunity turns up, that whether you want to take up this opportunity or not. So my suggestion is that if you found some interesting positions like in the city that you like, or in the university that you like, you can try to apply it in an early stage. Then at least you get some feedbacks or identify what could be improved or filled to meet up this requirement that they are listing on those kind of for faculty positions. That's kind of my suggestions.
That's very good. These are some very good suggestions. Thank you. It's good. It's always good to look out for all of those kind of like additional things, right? Other than just the research.
Yeah, definitely. It could be very helpful if I know it a little bit earlier, but that's my side. But now
yeah.
I know.
Yeah. thank you very much, Jing, for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks for your invitation.
Yeah, and the very best for your future research, of course.
Thanks. Good luck to you as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks once again. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So that concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. And just to say, if you want to learn more about iLeaps, please go to our website, iLeaps.org, where you'll find a link to our early careers website, where you can follow us on Twitter at iLeaps_ECSN or our Facebook page. Thanks.